All right, and good afternoon. So today I'm going to talk about Prophecy, which is a system that uses history for high-throughput fault tolerance. This is joint work with Wyatt Lloyd and Mike Friedman at Princeton University. So it's a reality today that non-crash failures happen in practice. Examples of this include Flickr returning random photographs to its users, or Facebook leaking source code. Now, it's difficult to model these kinds of failures. So one thing we can do is model them as malicious failures or Byzantine failures and design protocols to protect against that. Because surely if we can protect against a Byzantine fault, then we can protect against misconfigurations or crashes. The one thing we require is that these faults be independent. In the case of Facebook and Flickr, these problems were caused by a single misconfigured server. So how do we hide Byzantine faults from the client? Well, we do this in two steps. First, we replicate the service. For Byzantine fault tolerance, you need four replicas to tolerate one faulty replica. Now, one would normally think that if I have four replicas, this should improve the throughput of my system because I could say load balance requests to all of the replicas. Then the throughput of the system, if it was this to begin with, would be four times the amount. But this is not the case, because to truly protect against Byzantine faults, we need a protocol that looks something like this. First, the client needs to send the request to all of the replicas. Then the replicas participate in one or more rounds of agreement. Finally, they execute the request and return responses to the client. In this way, Byzantine fault-tolerant protocols achieve a strong consistency, which we call linearizability. But the price you pay is that every replica has to execute each request. And so the throughput of your system is no better than when you had a single replica. Okay, so BFT protocols have low throughput. Well, there are other problems as well. They require clients to be modified. They're also fundamentally designed for long-lived sessions. I'll justify these later on. But the goal of Prophecy is to address these problems so we can design fault-tolerant internet services that have high throughput and are also pretty and also offer good consistency. Now, except for maybe lunch today, there are no free lunches at NSDI. So we do pay a bit of a price. Okay? And the price we pay is that our benefits come in read-mostly workloads, and also we slightly weaken the consistency of BFT protocols. Okay, so in the rest of the talk, I'm going to try to solve each of these problems. We're going to solve the first problem using a system called distributed prophecy, or dprophecy, and the second two problems using a system called prophecy. Since we're targeting read workloads, let's see how a read request is executed by a BFT protocol. It starts with the client sending the request to each of the replicas. Then the replicas directly send a response back to the client, and the client checks to see if the responses agree. Now notice that for read requests, you can avoid the agreement phase to optimistically see if the responses you get back actually agree. But even with this optimization, notice that each replica still executes each request. So how do we reduce the cost of execution? Well, one thing we can do for read requests is we can put a cache in each of the replicas. Now, instead of executing the request, if the application sees that the response is already in the cache, it simply returns the entry in the cache. The client, as usual, checks the responses to see if they agree. Now, this solution has two main problems. The first is that the cache could be very large. Since you're storing full responses, effectively, your cache is as big as your disk. The second problem is we have this whole invalidation headache. And doing invalidation requires us to understand the causal dependencies between all of our operations. And for any even slightly complicated system, this is a very daunting task. So let's address these problems in turn. Well, we can deal with the big cache by storing a compact cache. So instead of storing the full requests and responses, let's just store a sketch of the requests and responses. Now, you can think of a sketch as a content hash over requests and a content hash over responses. So instead of a cache, we put what we call a sketcher in each of the replicas. Now, since the sketcher only contains sketches, we still need to get the full response from some replica. And we'll use this fact to deal with the invalidation problem. So let's say we're trying to access a web page, shown here in purple, that already has a sketch populated in the sketch table. When the client issues a read, what it does is it sends it to all of the replicas as before, but now it only asks one of the replicas to actually execute the read. This replica executes the read, returns a response, and the other replicas perform an in-memory lookup and return the contents of their sketch table. Then the client checks to see if these things agree, and if it does, it's happy. So notice that we've achieved higher throughput because we allow for fast load balanced reads. Only one replica actually executes the read request. The other ones just perform lookups in their tables and return the contents of the table. Okay, now suppose you got all responses back and things did not match. Let's take a step back and try to figure out why this might happen. So this means that somehow the web page was modified to this orange value while the contents of the sketch table were not modified. Now, on the one hand, on the left side, we have a key value store. And on the right side, we have a replicated state machine. So as I mentioned earlier, tracking causality between these two different APIs is a very difficult task. If we were to proactively invalidate the sketch tables, we'd have to somehow correlate all the operations in the replicated state machine to operations in the key value store. And because we can't do that, we do the following instead. If there is a mismatch from a fast read, the client will just reissue the read as a regular replicated read. Then the BFT protocol kicks in, the replicas agree, and eventually a response is returned. Before returning responses to the client, though, each of the replicas will update the entry of the sketch table. Then the responses come to the client, and it checks to make sure they agree. So by executing replicated reads, we update the entries in the sketch table, and we maintain a fresh cache. Okay, now with this kind of system, did we achieve the consistency guarantees of BFT protocols, or linearizability? Well, the answer, of course, is no, we did not. And the reason is because you can have faulty replicas. So let's say there's a faulty replica here, which we'll represent as the Facebook misconfigured server. It thinks the value of the web page is this red value. So now, when the client issues a read request, let's say it happens to ask that replica to return the full response. Well, that replica returns this response. Now, notice that the client won't just accept it blindly, because it'll compare it to the other sketches in the sketch tables, and if they don't agree, it won't accept the result. But what if instead the misconfigured server sent back a stale copy of the response, so the purple copy? Now, when the client compares it to the sketch tables, the sketch entries, they match, and it's happy. So the bottom line is that because of this design, fast reads may return stale data. We can limit the staleness using load balancing. So the next time a client has to issue a read, it asks a different replica to return the full response. So now the top replica is the one actually executing the read. Then when it compares the responses, it'll determine that something has changed, so I need to reissue the request as a replicated read. Now notice that load balancing is a very powerful technique here, because if we pick replicas uniformly at random, then you can show that the probability that you have k stale responses in a row is exponentially decreasing in k, which means that very soon you will hit a replica that has the freshest copy of the data. So to summarize, we call this system distributed prophecy, and the reason we call it prophecy is because we're effectively using history to optimize future read requests. If we compare this to traditional BFT, we see that in traditional BFT, each replica executes each read, and they achieve linearizability. Deprophecy, on the other hand, only executes a read at one replica, but we weaken the consistency to what we call delay once linearizability, and I'll define that later on. Okay, so we've addressed the throughput problem for read-mostly workloads at a cost of slightly weakening our consistency. We still have these two other problems, which are actually pretty bad problems when you think about internet services, because in an internet service, you'd ideally like to minimize how much you modify your clients. And also, these BFT protocols are designed for long-lived sessions. What do I mean by that? Well, the reason that they're designed for long-lived sessions is because there's a very high overhead to doing key exchanges. Every time a new session is created, the replicas and the clients have to exchange keys so they can sign messages. So here we've plotted the throughput of a good BFT protocol, PBFT, that uses the read-only optimization I mentioned earlier, and we plot its throughput against session length. So when your sessions are very long, you see that the throughput of the PBFT protocol is at its maximum. But as sessions get shorter, throughput drops off dramatically. Now notice that these are log-log scales. So for example, if your sessions only have 8 requests, throughput is 11% of the maximum. If sessions only have 2 requests, throughput is down to 3% of the maximum throughput. So we have this problem that we have a high overhead for each new session, and we also have to modify clients. Now, one way to solve both of these problems is by introducing a proxy in between the client and the replica group. And this is exactly what we're going to do. So now, the clients establish short-lived sessions with just a single proxy. And the proxy in the back end establishes long-lived sessions with all of the replicas. Since we have a central location, a proxy, it doesn't make sense to have separate sketch tables, so we consolidate all the sketch tables into a single centralized sketcher. And now notice that because the sketch table is in one location, we only need to ask one replica when we execute a read. Now, of course, for all this to work, we need to assume that the sketcher doesn't behave maliciously. Okay? And the reason, so in other words, it has to behave like a fail-stop sketcher. We choose to trust the sketcher in this way for two reasons. First, in typical internet services, you already trust the middle box for availability. And second, if we can keep the sketcher small and compact, then we can argue more easily for its correctness. We call this resulting system prophecy. Now let's see how we execute a read in this system. So a client sends a read to the sketcher. It forwards it to a single replica, which returns a response. And then the sketcher compares this response to its entry in the history table. Let's say it doesn't match, because if it did, it could just return the response to the client. If it doesn't match, the sketcher will say, OK, I need to reissue this as a regular replicated read. So it does that. The nodes agree. Finally, a response is returned by one of the replicas, and the others just return hashes of the response. The sketcher compares them, sees that they agree, and updates the sketch table contents before returning a response to the client. Okay. So notice that, like distributed prophecy, prophecy has the property of enabling fast load balance reads. And things are even better here because now you really only talk to one replica at a time. You don't need to ask the other replicas for sketches like we did in dprophecy. But we also have the problem, like dprophecy, that fast reads can return stale data. For example, the misconfigured Facebook server could be sitting right there, and it could return a stale copy of a web page that matches the contents currently stored in the sketcher. Because we can return stale data, we've reduced the consistency guarantees to delay once linearizability instead of linearizability. Now let's try to understand what this means. So to do that, let's first take a stab at linearizability. Now, very roughly and vaguely speaking, linearizability gives you a total ordering of the request that's consistent across all replicas. So, for example, the replica group might execute the following sequence of operations, where W's are writes and R's are reads. Now, one property of linearizability is that it guarantees that reads will always reflect the state of the most recent write. So, in particular, if we look at these reads, they'll reflect the state of the write closest to them. Now, delay once linearizability, on the other hand, violates this read-after-write property. Now, reads may reflect the state of older writes. This is where the staleness comes in, as we've seen in the examples I showed. In the paper, we prove that, or we argue that prophecy achieves delay once consistency. And this is actually not so easy to show because in prophecy, there are different entities involved. We have the sketchers and the replicas. And the fast reads are only executed by individual replicas. So I encourage you to take a look at the paper for the argument on as to why our implementation of prophecy actually satisfies this consistency. OK, so now that we know our consistency has been reduced, we should ask ourselves, is this a reasonable consistency model? What can I do with it? So let's take the example from the Yahoo Peanuts paper, where you want to upload some embarrassing photos of yourself to an online photo sharing site. Okay, this is not that embarrassing, but there are far worse pictures out there. So let's say I want to put these up. What do I do? Well, the first thing I'll do is I'll remove people I don't want to see the photos from my access control list. Then I'll upload the photos, and then maybe I'll refresh them to see if they actually got uploaded. Now, if you have a weak consistency model, like eventual consistency, the order of these operations might get changed. And then you have the very disappointing scenario where your colleagues can see these photos of you. On the other hand, delay once consistency will never reorder updates. It only optimizes reads. So the order of your operations will be preserved. So to summarize, dprophecy addressed the problem of low throughput, and prophecy addressed the problems that plague internet services. So we combine these two and successfully solve all of these problems with the caveat that our benefits only apply to read-mostly workloads and that we've reduced consistency a little bit. We implemented both of these systems, both dprophecy and prophecy, by modifying PBFT. Now, why did we use PBFT? Well, first, it's a stable and complete implementation. And second, recent results have shown that it is very competitive with other systems like Ziziva. Our implementation is written in C++, and we use the Tamer asynchronous I/O library. And roughly speaking, the sketcher required about 3,000 lines of code. So we argue that it is a small sketcher. Some of this code was new, and some of this was modified PBFT code. In evaluating our system, we compared Prophecy against a proxied version of PBFT, which basically looks like Prophecy but has no sketcher. We call these proxied systems. We also compared dprophecy against regular PBFT. Now, I'm only going to have time to talk about the proxied systems in this talk. In particular, we're going to ask ourselves a few questions. The first question we'll ask is, how well does prophecy perform on null workloads? A null workload is a workload that essentially does nothing. The reason we want to check this is because this is a benchmark often used in the BFT literature. Second, we also want to ask how prophecy performs on a more realistic workload. And finally, we want to see where the system bottlenecks are and see if we can overcome them to scale out the system. So here's our basic setup. We have 100 clients running on a single machine, talking with a single sketcher that executes the requests concurrently. And the sketcher talks to a four-node replica group that is running PBFT. Okay, this is the basic setup. Of course, in the scale-out experiments, we use more replicas. Most of our graphs will show throughput on the y-axis, either absolute numbers like this one or normalized against PBFT, and what we call a transition ratio on the x-axis. So what do I mean by a transition ratio? The transition ratio tells you how often changes occur in your workload. So if you have a transition ratio of 1, this means that basically every read was preceded by a write. If you have a transition ratio of 0, this means that reads are only preceded by other reads. So in effect, what a transition ratio tells you is the fraction of times your fast reads will fail. Now, to give you an idea of what's a reasonable number, we performed a measurement study, which you can read about in the paper, of the Alexa top sites. And we found that an overwhelming majority, like over 90% of the URLs we requested, exhibited a transition ratio of less than 15%. So that's kind of a ballpark figure we're going to use to evaluate our results. Now, when we evaluate prophecy on a null workload, it's a little disappointing. We find that prophecy only provides a throughput advantage when the transition ratio is very small. As the transition ratio increases to something that's really not that high, prophecy's advantage completely diminishes, and then the overhead of the system kicks in. So we have to ask ourselves, why is this happening? Maybe this has something to do with the fact that we're running this on a null workload. So instead, we tried a more realistic workload. We took unmodified Apache web servers and had each of the replicas run Apache web server. So that now we've basically implemented here a replicated Apache web service. Okay? Using this setup and accessing 1-byte pages from the Apache web servers, Prophecy's throughput advantage is much more dramatic. So when there are no transitions in the workload, Prophecy achieves almost 3.7 times the throughput of PBFT. At the representative transition ratio of 15%, Prophecy's throughput advantage is still twofold. And only when you get closer to something like a 60% transition ratio does Prophecy's advantage tend to diminish. So why the discrepancy between the null workload and this more realistic workload? To explore this further, we measured Prophecy's throughput, shown here normalized against PBFT, as the processing time at the replica servers increases. So notice that when the replica servers don't do much work, when the processing time is very short, Prophecy's advantage is very little. However, when the replicas do more work, they have to process each request and actually do something, like look up something on disk or perform some computation, then Prophecy's advantage blows up dramatically. Now, you might ask, what's a reasonable number on this x-axis? Well, what we did is we took the Apache experiment from the previous slide, and we measured, on average, how long it took for each of the replicas to execute a read operation. We found that this number was about 94 microseconds. So at the representative number of 94 microseconds, Prophecy still achieves a throughput that is almost four times that of PBFT. So the moral of the story is that null workloads can be misleading because they can represent where the performance overheads and bottlenecks are in your system. So it's important to evaluate your system on real workloads. Finally, to see how Prophecy performs when the workload has roughly 15% transitions, we show this in the green line over here. And we see that at the 94 microsecond mark, the throughput is still almost twice as much as that of PBFT. Okay, so in our basic setup, we only had one sketcher. Now, we want to see what is the limit of this sketcher. So we push the sketcher to its capacity by increasing the response size and measuring the throughput of the system, again, here normalized against PBFT. So notice, and this is a log scale on the x-axis, that when the response size reaches about 16 kilobytes, which is, on average, a fairly large web page, based on our measurement study, we find that Prophecy bottlenecks. So what does that mean? That means that the sketcher is becoming saturated. And the reason is that the sketcher has to compute a sketch on every response that's returned, as well as the requests that it receives. So because the responses are big, it spends most of its time computing these sketches. So how do you get around this problem? Well, the obvious solution is to add more sketchers to your system. So here's a possible scale-out architecture that you could implement using Prophecy. This one is geared more towards an HTTP or web workload, because we have, on the first tier, sketchers that handle requests, and on the second tier, sketchers that handle responses. We have more response sketchers because we expect responses to be a lot bigger than requests, at least for HTTP workloads. Now, notice that this general technique of doing some load balancing in the first tier and then partitioning the space in the second tier is a pretty standard way of scaling out your system. So we would argue that this is not any more complicated than what you would normally do anyway. Using a simplified scale-out architecture, we were able to scale Prophecy's performance to larger replica groups. So here you have replica groups of size 4, 7, 10, and 13, and the red bar shows Prophecy's throughput in kilorequests per second. So Prophecy achieves linear scale-up, you can see that, while PBFT stays flat. PBFT is shown in blue. And the reason PBFT stays flat is because no matter how many replicas you add, each replica still has to execute each request. So to summarize, we've designed a system called Prophecy that helps us achieve high throughput fault tolerance. And it does this mainly by relying on fast load balanced reads. dProphecy achieves similar benefits, but for a more traditional fault tolerance setting. We've also shown that Prophecy scales linearly with the number of replicas in your group, while PBFT's performance stays relatively flat. And we achieve these benefits with a few limitations. First, we achieve them for read-mostly workloads. But again, we've done a measurement study that corroborates this assumption. Second, we reduce consistency to delay one's linearizability, which we argue is still useful for many applications. Okay, that's all I have. Thanks. I'll take any questions.
Hi, Ryan Peterson from Cornell. Why should I trust your proxy if I don't trust any other server on the internet? That's okay. Why I'm using the service, right?
Well, so the idea is that any internet service will have some kind of load balancer in front of it. And what we're doing is we're asking you to extend that footprint a little bit by adding the sketcher in there. And if we keep this small enough, we think that this is a reasonable thing to do. If you want to provide high throughput fault tolerance for an internet service, now if you don't want to trust anyone, then you're stuck to the deprofacy model, which you can use to improve the performance of your system. But in that case, I would only recommend using deprofacy in a more traditional setting, like maybe somewhere inside your data center.
Sure, but I'm saying if you use the proxy, then that's a single point of failure for a malicious user can just attack that one machine.
Okay,
and
so
take down the service.
Yes, if you were to maliciously attack the proxy, yes, and then it could return whatever it wanted to the clients.
Right. Okay.
That's correct. So what you'd want to do is maybe add more proxies, but that would only be able to deal with fail-stop failures.
Any more questions? Well, I can ask a question.
Sure.
So you made this point about session lengths and the cost of exchanging keys. But there's this fundamental thing, right, that if you don't have some kind of authenticated connection to even the proxy, right, then in principle, malicious guys can inject any reply and you get no fault tolerance at all, let alone Byzantine fault tolerance.
Yes. So for this, and we explained this a little bit in the paper, the communication between the client and the proxy for internet services, I think, will depend on the application that you want. If you want an application that's completely secure, like a bank system, then you'd want to use probably some kind of application layer security. But there are other systems where you would not need that between the client and the scheduler. For example, Facebook. You know, you'll do some kind of security at the beginning when you log in, but afterwards you might use cookie-based authentication. So depending on what your application is, you'd want to enforce some kind of security between the client and the scheduler. But you're right, that absolutely has to be addressed.
But it seems that in that case, why couldn't you use cookie-based authentication with all the replicas?
With all the replicas?
Without the proxy in the middle.
So you mean basically go from the client directly to the replicas. Well, the problem there is that you still have to negotiate with each of the replicas.
Right.
So if you have a big replica group, that's a problem. Whereas in Prophecy, if you add sketchers, you increase throughput without having to increase the size of your replica group. I think if you did it your way, you would basically have to duplicate entire replica groups if you wanted to scale the system.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again.